Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Aloha!
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And also our producer, partner, extraordinaire, who everything happens because of him, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
It's true. It's a lot of expectations. Yeah. Hello, everybody.
By the way, we appreciate you making that time machine and going back 10 years to create this podcast. Thank you.
That's right.
Very appreciated.
Yeah.
Did it exist before Bryce?
I mean, I don't remember it.
Check the Patreon. No one knows.
Yeah. Happy to be here. I'm just saying, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's a difference between Justin, Brian, and Andrew having a fun phone conversation. We go afterwards like, hey, would be cool if we shared this.
To like making it a real thing. How was that transition for you? Like, if you don't mind me starting off with a topic.
Sure.
Because Weird Things is one of the older podcasts that is not just in name, but also, you know, it was Andrew and Justin at first, right?
Yeah, for one episode, and then I joined them on episode two. Yeah.
Gotcha. What?
And I've still continue to think of myself as the lucky guest who keeps getting asked back.
Oh, Brian, you are. Even though you're the one streaming it, have control of the feed, and can any moment start doing the show without me, you know.
Yeah. So, because I know originally it used to be like a very, I remember watching old live streams of Weird Things, and it would be like, the stream was on only because it was possible, and there was no focusing on the chat room, no worrying about visual stuff. It was just the three of you guys on the call.
There was a fairly long amount of time where we were all banned, a self-imposed ban from having anything to distract us from the moment. Like we, in those early days, as you can imagine, with a lot of improvisational storytelling, like distractions matter. And I think we've gotten to a place where we're able to open things up and there's value in hearing from the chat. Yeah. But when we were really discovering what the core of what we're about was, I remember it being like, okay, so it begins. Shut down everything. Nothing exists but the three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I think, as Brian and Justin, you went from that other show to Night Attack, as your engagement in real time increased beyond just the show and overall and all that, I think that that's, you know, we sort of evolved into sort of bringing that engagement here, for better or for worse. I'm still on the fence on that. But yeah, it's evolved over time. And, you know, that's the thing. It's certainly, we were talking about between the break, you know, Justin was talking about creating content for Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, tell us a little about that.
Bryce, did I tell you that I deleted Twitter from my phone?
I've heard such a story.
So I deleted Twitter from my phone.
How did you tell people you did this?
Mostly I just wait until Bryce is on the line. I just tell him. So I've been on Instagram a lot more, and I've kind of appreciated how Instagram is kind of, I don't know. For me, at the very least, it does not hook into the receptors in my brain that make me a crack addict. It is something that I can enjoy for what it is. I appreciate following who I'm following, and that's that. But I, got the itch to be like, or I saw somebody else. Yeah, Jessica Yellen. That's it. She's got a new book out called News Not Noise, and she does just these little videos here on Instagram where she kind of like explains news stories, but she does a great job, and it's super rad in terms of her just giving a good summary without it being too much of a partisan kind of thing. I mean, obviously she has a little bit of a tilt, but that's fine. You want to bring your personality there. The videos are well shot while feeling personal. And so I have this new standing desk, and I put it in the living room where I have great natural light. And I'm like, well, you know, like, I wonder how hard or easy this would be, and like what the reaction would be if I just summarized a news story, but kind of doing it more from the PX3 perspective and focusing a little bit more on the campaigns. And so, you know, I realized a few things, including that unless I'm going to start uploading them through Instagram TV, I can only have them be a minute. But I think that's a pretty good self-imposed goal anyway for what I'm talking about. And I can talk a little bit more about the things that, you know, Yellen is very focused more on like government stuff, and I'm more focused on campaign stuff. So it's been fun so far. I don't know exactly, like, looking at my other videos that I posted, it seems like it's getting solid engagement comparably to that. So we'll see if it grows. But this was the first one that I did. This was literally just like I was hanging around and figured I would try something and see how long it took. But it's been good. Shoot them on my laptop, airdrop it to my phone, and then upload it.
It's fascinating that the way that Instagram works, that our so much of our workflow goes through our phone now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, that was the workflow was literally based around because I was initially very excited about Instagram TV because I wanted to upload my jury episodes because it's a daily thing. It's about, you know, they were saying that their target for length is certainly longer than the minute that you would get in your main feed, but nothing longer than like 20 minutes. And I'm like, oh, great. Perfect. Jury Daily fits right in there. 4 days a week content. Visual content, but it was such a pain in the ass to impossible to upload it from the computer, like they, or even just get it from a PC to my phone and upload it. And it just, I just wound up losing interest in it. And I don't know a lot of people that are using Instagram TV, so I haven't revisited it, but off a Mac going to my phone, couldn't be easier. AirDrop just works.
Yeah. We had to do that with the Instagram stuff for Scam Nation and Modern Rogue, where we render out a cut on a PC. I put it on Dropbox and then download it on my phone. And then with Instagram, Instagram's wonky because you have to trim it in Instagram. Otherwise, it'll not convert the video file.
Oh, so you have to put extra fat in there intentionally.
To cut into it. Otherwise, because I've had that happen where I've spent a day trying to get just a normal thing to work and it won't. It's so weird that Instagram makes this super difficult, especially for something like Instagram TV, which is longer content, the ideally more produced content, some of the stuff that I've seen on there. But
right?
It does feel like in this age of, you know, Facebook is cancer, Twitter is cigarettes, it seems like Instagram, still Facebook, is coming out the winner as far as branding goes. Like little things like that, you're all caught up, no more to see here, that level of engagement, I don't know, it seems like that's something that personally I feel like I'm very weak on. You know, especially as and we've talked about this, you know, when Twitter starts to feel like a liability, like with the James Gunn stuff or whatever, thankfully it feels like the pendulum is swinging back. But I was looking at my metrics and I've gotten quiet, like to the tune of half as many posts, most of them responses to people chatting at me. But hopefully that's something I intend to work on this year, is figuring out more micro slices, if not on Twitter, then certainly on Instagram. I'm not doing near enough on that platform.
Yeah. I think part of that for Instagram is because it is so limited, right? Because it's all photo or video based. It's not some big threading in conversations. It is kind of a shallow structure. Obviously, people use it for a lot of different things, but it's kind of feels like it's built to be this sort of shallow, wide, platform rather than Twitter, which is keeps trying to, like, you know, thread replies,
right,
mentioning stuff, you know. It feels, because it's more compact, that, the constraints make it feel
Instagram better. Feels a little bit more like a micro broadcast. You know, you're not going to spend more than a minute watching a thing, and pretty much the most you could do is hit a heart. I mean, you could type some words that probably nobody will see, and there's no easy way to continue to make it. Like Twitter, of course, encourages back and forth, because they want it to be a chat room that sucks up all of your time. Mm-hmm. So it seems like Instagram is well positioned to pick up the slack.
Yeah, and it sounds like you have got a good format here, Justin, for, you know, another offshoot of your political project of, you know, making a version that is formatted for Instagram instead of just chopping up a minute of part of the podcast, right?
And that's I think I've done clips like Twitch is that's a good thing about Twitch is that organically people will be clipping out the things that they like the most from it, but very rarely are they in the political sense, you know, cogent thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. So I've definitely done stuff like that where I've just had funny moments here on the stream, and I'll make those the thing. I think this was somebody playing the theme from Cats on the Friday Hype Train.
But yeah, no, like these other videos that you're actually shooting for Instagram feel they feel kind of vloggy, but they also kind of feel authentic. Right. If I was scrolling, yeah, I would think this is, oh, yeah. I mean, he shot this for Instagram, but also it, like, even though technologically it's very like the easy, you know, what's the easiest way you can do it? Just taking that little bit feels like more thought has been put into it than any
more,
other.
Yeah, more direct that I'm speaking to my Instagram followers about the thing that I'm good at. And like oftentimes I think that's the element that Instagram does get super right, despite the fact that I very much agreed with what a friend once described it as Twitter for illiterates. I think that it makes sense.
Subliterates.
Sorry. It very much understands visually, and also spoiler alert, I like the ads on Instagram. Like some of them are garbage, but
good.
It's like
you're gonna get more.
Yeah, I mean the there's a non-zero chance that I see something and I'm like, either I like it 90% of its clothing or some event that's happening in Oakland or San Francisco. But it's like, you know, the clothing stuff, I've bought two or three things that I've seen advertised to me on it. The other stuff is either interesting in that like, oh, maybe I would like a piece of clothing like that. Or like, oh my God, really? Like, is that what my metrics are telling me I should be wearing? That seems a little bit weird, but it's always like interesting. I never feel like it's, oppressive like it is on Facebook or totally useless like it is on Twitter.
Yeah.
My question is this: how long before Facebook makes Instagram suck?
If I was going to place a bet, I think that they have a sore paw right now and that they're going to move slow with Instagram. I think that Facebook understands that their main brand is fairly tarnished and that Instagram seems to be well liked. I would suspect they'll take their time.
There's two things that are already happening. Number one, Zuckerberg seems very gung-ho about uniting all of their chat platforms. Like they want to have everything feeding into one master chat. And I would assume that that might also mean one master stories section because they replicated that functionality. That I think would make Instagram worse for me. Like I don't like the people that message me on Facebook. I like having a little oasis in a separate place where it's only Instagram chat. Rare though I get it. I enjoy when it comes in. And the other thing is, like Andrew said, just pump up that ad volume to the point where the wheels fall off.
Well, there's more to, like, I understand, like, Facebook politically is worried, you know, and they're trying to say, yeah, we should have, you know, scrutiny. These are things that everybody says when they want to sort of negotiate the terms of that. It's about ad dollar. It's about revenue. Yeah. And if Facebook, mm-hmm. Facebook's is noticing that they're having a drop off in new users, less people are using Facebook, and they're seeing growth in Instagram. And if they're making less money in ad dollars, wanting goodwill is irrelevant. It's like Google. I like when Google said our policy is like, do no evil. I was naive. I'm like, great, such a great idea. And then you're like, they bought DoubleClick, and then it was like, oh, you're just another company. I get it. Facebook, they'll say whatever they can to win over public support. They're to make money, you know, and so. Yeah. If they're losing people to Instagram, which they own, and then they're going to say, well, we got to make it back in Instagram and we can do things. There's an article, or I was listening to the book Coders, and they talk about the story of adding newsfeed to Facebook and how people hated newsfeed, And then they grew to love newsfeed. Like, I don't know. I get why they did newsfeed, but then they realized, man, look at what they don't get into is like, hey, newsfeed's great because our engagements went way the hell up and we have 100 times more opportunities to sell ads. So, you know, what's the, I don't know. Brian, I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right as well. Because
yeah, I hope you're right.
Well, and talking about something like newsfeed, or I think it's very similar, like the homepage of YouTube, right? I use YouTube a lot, and I keep bumping up against the subscriptions of my YouTube. Not that I have too many, but it's that I want to watch something on YouTube, and there's nothing new. And so I end up leaning on the homepage to show me more stuff. And I feel like Twitter or Facebook has to be a very similar way for some people, where they maybe they don't follow a lot of people, or maybe they don't have a lot of people in their Facebook network or whatever, but they want to see good stuff. They want to see new stuff. And whatever is the most recent thing is, like, I understand having that experience on YouTube makes me understand more the, like, algorithm move for Facebook and Twitter. But it's tough if you're on the outside of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty unplugged from, like, everything. You know, I go into Twitter like Brian, like you. I go in there a little bit to like go see, you know, who's at replying to me, and I'll respond. I haven't had so many witty bon mots, you know, the first time I've ever said that out loud, bon mots. I've not used it that much. And as I get absorbed into either writing a book or some other project, you know, I just don't go there as much. But also I find it too, like, I don't know, like, I'm like, do I want to open that door to that vampire, you know? It's like comments. Like, if I don't make comments now, because I'm like, if I make a comment, it doesn't stop there. And if I'm on, even on a place like Hacker News, I'm going to wait for someone to reply. And then I got to respond to that. And the next thing you know, I've wasted a day.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think we are coming to an evolved point of social networks. We are realizing its drawbacks and limitations and how much we want to be involved with it. You know, I think there's kind of a lot going on, but no matter what, there will be healthy and unhealthy ways to deal with those kind of things. And even if, as Brian said, like Twitter or cigarettes, you know, cutting down's probably smart, you know, even if you don't quit.
So Instagram's vaping then, I guess. I'm amazed by the quality of content that, and again, it's like, hey, it's 2019. Andrew's talking like it's 2009. But like, and I watched, you know, season one and season two, you know, YouTube series of the seasons of Defunct Land, you know, which is, you know, the history of, you know, these theme parks and stuff. It's amazing. It's so well done. I'm like, I've enjoyed that more than probably any Netflix documentary I've watched in recent times, you know, and actually like, I've gone through Netflix and like I haven't really been pulled into anything lately. I've been, you know, but you know, I think about that, like, you know, Modern Rogue, you know, things like this, the quality of a lot of these things now from these indies is amazing. And it's, you know, we still need to figure out better ways to compensate and to make it worthwhile. And, you know, YouTube, you push for getting subscriptions, but the, as you know, like a subscription doesn't mean watch it, you know, people watch it,
right.
You just accumulate them over time, but you know, there's different metrics and I don't know. And.
Yeah.
I have no answer. I have no. Bryce, what are you working on?
What am I working on?
Yeah.
I mean, all the work we're doing here with Scam Nation and Modern and, you know, shooting Modern Rogue and stuff. And then I've got my podcast, the Trending Lemon podcast.
Let's talk about that. Going now, because you've been rocking it for a little bit.
Yeah, it's been since December. I think it launched like Christmas week. It's been going well. It originally started off as just doing, the idea was it's like an interview style show, but instead of preparing questions, we do BuzzFeed quizzes. And over the past like month or two, I've been working in news stories. Things that are, you know, topical or really big on social media. So like last week we talked about, I don't know if you guys remember the Florida Man headlines phenomenon, right?
Sure. Yeah. I put in your date of birth without the year and right. Florida Man and Google it and you will find the Florida Man story that happened on your birthday and everybody was having a good time.
I totally miss this phenomenon. That's amazing.
Yeah. And so, you know, we broke it down and, you know, for my take on it, right. It's like, well, you know, those are still human beings, you know, this is kind of a, an upturning of your nose at what is a pretty open, transparent public records laws that Florida has, and also a possible security risk, right? Like putting out your birth date, and not just with this, but there are lots of things of like, well, you know, what's your the first letter of your first name and the first letter of your last name, and they give you a weird My Little Pony name.
The BuzzFeed quiz of sharing the first seven letters of your mother's maiden name will reveal this about you.
Right. But at some point, right, if you do enough of those, or if you're someone who gets caught up in those,
right,
you are giving up parts of your data.
Find out the secret to your social security number. Type it in here and we'll tell you.
Yeah.
So that's kind of some of the stuff that I've been trying to fold into the show, as because a few months ago, BuzzFeed had the big personnel layoffs, and that kind of affected the quality of quizzes that were being floated on the website.
Oh, really?
If that's possible.
Yeah. Just because I look for a very specific type of quiz, there's a lot of like pop culture stuff, like which Umbrella Academy character are you?
Sure.
Like, stuff yeah. that is not very good. But so I've been folding in new stuff to kind of make that format-wise more sustainable. But otherwise, it's going pretty well. You know, the toughest thing for me is just booking people, because it's just me and you know, a guest. So it requires a lot of, like, every week we gotta do it, gotta find someone and nail them down. But I think things have been going pretty well. The other noticeable thing was 2 weeks back, this was the week of South By. I'd been talking on the show a lot about, like, okay, we take a lot of these quizzes, but I don't really know how they work on the back end, right? They have a very sophisticated platform to make these quizzes and share them and all, but I never made one. And so I thought I would be doing a very quick episode. I thought, like, okay, I don't have a guest because we're busy with South By, so I'll just do a quiz live on the show. I'll record it, and that'll be it. And I spent an hour to an hour and a half trying, because it would post and then it wouldn't work. The post was messed up or something. So what I thought was supposed to be super easy ended up being like a really an exercise in frustration. But that is how that
really
happens.
I like that episode, yeah? By the way. I thought it was good. I think you should do more either one mic or barely assisted kind of stuff.
I think my
only note would be that you could probably trim up some of the pimento cheese sandwich.
Oh, sure.
What I'm typing. But other than that, like, I thought it was a fun deconstruction, because to me, what I love about that show is you are using very obvious personality detours to kind of like do an interview, which is like in a very, very clever way. That's where you get a lot of kind of like the best interviews are when you just throw out a little bit of a twist and the subject starts talking about themselves.
Yeah.
And this is such a great way to kind of do that organically, but also exploring how these things work and how they're built and where you want to go with it, I think was smart. And it was a great way for you to talk about the story, which was the Operation Varsity Blues, which wound up ensnaring a bunch of rich people in a ploy to get their kids into various colleges, that you could talk about it in a cool way.
Yeah. And that was the other part of that quiz on kind of the behind the scenes side, was like prepping to talk about that news story, kind of in a way I don't do on any of the other podcasts that we do or even on the other episodes. Really cemented that I wanted to do news stories like that, because because there's also really interesting things happening there. Having a means to like really dive into a news story and understand it and then explain it and then take it into this other thing of making a thing, was great. You know, that's a level of research that I don't tend to need to do on any of the other projects. And so, I'm glad that you like that. I hadn't really considered doing too much of those, just because the outcome was so unfortunate. I'm glad you like that.
Yeah, no, I think you should not be shy to mix up that format, because it's a good format, but I think it's still finding like whether or not you are doing a clever version of the interview that gets somebody to reveal that, like, you know, their mom left when they were five, right? Mm. Or if it's like Hot Ones and it's like, oh, we're just doing a clever little thing that it doesn't really matter what the answers are. It matters that you're seeing the reaction to this abnormal, weird, you know, riff factory where the, you know, people can just go off.
Yeah.
And I think it's still finding what it is. But the first time that I really felt like you were kind of, you know, it was more of an analytical show. It was more of a show about getting to the hidden truth about things was when you were building a quiz and you were like, okay, well, I know people are going to think like, well, what college do you want to get into? Like Harvard, Yale. And then you have to think like, okay, well, what's like a mid-tier college? Like now we're getting into the psychology of like, you know, like, oh, did I go to a mid-tier school? Did I go to a low-tier school? Like, that was good. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to talk a little bit what I did here because it might be helpful for people. Like, I wanted to do a little more of my podcast studio, or as I like to say, the corner of this room. and, you know, I was thinking about, like, man, like, you guys have really good setups. You guys stream all the time and all that. I use this for, you know, 2 hours a week. The rest of the time, it's sort of my work environment. So I needed something that was kind of flexible. Not that you guys, what you do isn't work. Let me make that very clear. I just want to show you what I did here because, like, I'm like, again, like, I'm like, it's 2019. And I feel like, you know, you take your grandmother somewhere and you explain stuff to her. Like, phones are small now, you know, like, I have an electric car. Well, ain't that a squirt? You know, I have no idea. So I'm that person. And so I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll put a monitor in back of me. I'm like, all right, like, I have a big ass TV to my left here, right? Big ass TV, right? Yeah. But I said, I don't want something big. I'm like, I'll get like a 50 inch or something, like, which is funny because that's not big anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'll go order on Amazon. I'll get a TV, put it behind me. How much does a 4K 50 inch TV cost now?
It's like what, $399 or something?
$300, Brian.
Wow.
$299, right? Goodness. For this TV, right?
Like, Jesus.
I remember when HD monitors were like, you know, $10,000. And so you can get a 50-inch, you know, HD, 50-inch 4K monitor for, you know, $300, right?
Wow.
Cheaper if you just want to go HD, but HD, ew. So I got that. And then what I did is, let me move this here. And I said, I needed a support. I didn't want to mount it to the wall.
Yeah, you've got
put it on this cart.
Yeah, is it a wheeled cart?
Yeah, it's a wheeled cart, which was like $80 or something. So, you know, that lets me just slide it in and out of there, which makes it easier. And then I put an Apple TV, I've strapped an Apple TV to the back so I can stream to there doing that. But, you know, it has like, these things now come in, like, this is actually a Roku TV, so it has that built in, and I'm sure there's some other stuff there. But I could just use an HDMI cable, but I put the Apple TV in there and whatever there. My light source, my primary light source, I was showing this before the show here. And again, for our audio listeners, which is everybody not listening live, you know, the TV, I have the TV is off to my side there, so I can kind of whatever I see, you see it over my shoulder, kind of like a newscast. For my light source, I bought this ring light, which is very bright if I aim it at the camera, which has got an iPhone holder, so you can, it clips to your desk, so it just clips right to the desk. And this is pretty good. It's better than the stupid thing I built out of the IKEA box, which I was so proud of myself. It's a nice, even light. I've got a little source over there. It was $20 for this ring light, an LED ring light, which my first LED light for my video camera was like an $800 thing. And now for $20, you get something that holds your phone and can light and you can stream from. And it'll look better than, like, you know, the garbage that I've done with like nice cameras and lights, but not sitting at things upright. So,
yeah, you know, the tech on, you know, stuff. I mean, that's not even prosumer level stuff. This is just like consumer grade goods that are now good enough for this stuff.
Well, and relevant to our interests as we get ready to design a new studio.
Yeah.
As you're describing all of this, Andrew, I'm just thinking like, all right, let me make some notes here. Talk to Andrew. Find out.
I mean, even in my apartment where I'll do some streaming stuff. I just have it's meant to be like a reading light, but the panel flips up and so it'll face forward and it will dim and change the color temperature and stuff. It's, you know, that was only like $20 and that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And I was showing like this ring light, what's cool is like I can adjust the color temperature here.
Yeah.
Basic, like it's just between white and amber. But if I wanted to do, you know, if I wanted to do more light or light more, I would look at, like, I would probably just, I could get some of these and mount them around. And I've got a camera up here, which I haven't turned on yet, that's got a ring light around there. I don't know if that's any good or not, but yeah, it's so much cheaper now. I mean, just that I'm still beside myself that it's a $300 display, you know, with the cart, you know, I got, you know, $400 for the whole thing there, with the Apple TV, and then it goes up. But point is that I just remember, like, before podcasting, remember, Justin, we would do the show at the James Randi Foundation. We would do an audio cast because we would sit there going, like, what should we call? Randy would be like, what do we call this? We're like, I don't know, internet radio, whatever. Nobody knew what to call this because the word podcast hadn't been invented yet. We had to have a telephone line. Like, or we're using we had the line going from the computer to the modem line was the longest cord we could find. And when people would come into the studio, they would trip on it and they'd unplug. And our shows were just a battle. And this was just an audio stream. This is using real, like, you know, real audio. What was it?
Real audio,
whatever streaming thing they had there, you know. And then, you know, we always grumble, though, like, the tools haven't got much better, you know.
Yeah, I mean, geez, the fact that there's a few companies that are trying to make it a branded thing. But the fact that, like, Feedburner is still just – garbage. In fact, it reminds me, I got to go check my Feedburner stats because the best way to do it is to check them on the first, so you can set it for 30 days because God forbid you'd want to get any more granular with your numbers.
Wow. Anyway, yeah, Feedburner was a great, you know, Feedburner, those of you don't know, was if you create a podcast, you need to create, you know, an RSS feed, which basically makes it when you say, hey, what episodes are there? It pulls up this list of these are the most recent episodes. And Feedburner is a way that formats to make it very clear. This is the podcast episode. This is the title. This is that. Mm-hmm. Feedburner has been around for 12 years, 14 years, like right at the start of pod, maybe 15. And I think they got bought by Google.
Yep.
Yeah, and then they were like, great. And then Google just sort of, it's one of those projects, like, there are no engineers on it. You know, at night, the janitor comes in and goes and, you know, make sure the server space is fine. And then he walks off because, and it's sad because Apple embraced podcasts way early on with iTunes. And it was wonderful for podcasting. It was really a big moment because that's how discoverability, whatever. And then they kind of went off and forgot about it. And then they finally added a pretty good podcast app. But their resources are getting better. But Google has sort of had some infrastructure things. But, man, like I don't know. Like, I would love like a Google, like, web services for podcasts. You know, like, just pay us here, upload it here, and whatever. And, yeah, we'll get all the data and all this there. I mean, it would just be such a smart play for them, though.
The fact that it is still as annoying, you know, my brother and his wife want to do and are doing a, like, parent podcast. And he was like, hey, what's the easiest way to do this? And I'm like, man, it's like really the best thing you have going for you is that, like, it's the same tools that I was using 10 years ago, but at least I've been using them for 10 years so I can explain to you how frustrating they are.
Well, yeah, there are services like Anchor, which just got bought by Spotify, which try to simplify it. But my problem with Anchor is it's very opaque, you know, on what it is and, you know, what where does it live? What does it do? How do I control it? Whatever. And, you know, it doesn't feel like it's the YouTube of podcasting. And,
well, I think because it fell into, you know, there's a few different buckets that podcasting you know, innovations tend to go into: podcast creation or podcast distribution. Podcast creation tends to be about the simplest possible way. And it's very obsessed. They tend to be very obsessed with, like, make a podcast on your phone, make a podcast by hitting a button and talking. Yeah. And it's like, that's okay. But I kind of feel like that content is now very clearly the domain of Twitter and Instagram. I think that if the tools that Anchor had were for Instagram as a way that you could just, like, make a cool new thing and post it to Instagram really, really easily, a visualized, you know, take machine, then that would be pretty cool. But for podcasting, it's just not what it needs to be. I was approached by Anchor months and months and months ago, and I think two pivots for them ago, and they were like, hey, we'll pay you to just make content. And it's like, yeah, but I got to talk into my phone and I got to use their UI. It wasn't worth my time. Now they've pivoted more toward being a podcast hosting thing, but that puts them in conflict with everybody else that wants to do it, which basically is just a way that they can control ads.
Sure.
You know, it's all about ad sales or app downloads that they can then use. So I don't know. My kingdom for, and there are cool places that simplify everything. I think like what Fireside is one where it's just an easier upload and analytics kind of platform than Feedburner, but it's a little pricey for my taste.
There's still Fireside. There's still Libsyn is still around. They've been around forever. It's weird, right? Like, because the ways that you could do a podcast 10 years ago are still the ways you can do them. And there are a few of these services like Fireside or Anchor that are trying to find new inroads, but also when what you want is granular control or, recording on a certain platform or publishing, editing on certain platforms, there's still not an all-in-one everything yet. And I think, you know, companies like Anchor kind of want to be that if everyone changes what they think all is, and that's not ever going to happen.
Anchor was a fun sort of thing. You start off like, oh, create a podcast, pull out your phone. And like, I think they had a cool thing. Like, you could talk to a friend or something, which was a great idea of like the duplex part of that was kind of cool. But then you're like, oh, like I got this thing here. It's not weird things. It's not, you know, now if I want to go put this on the iTunes store, I got to go through them. And I mean, just,
sure.
It's challenging. It's really, I don't know. Because it's like YouTube worked because, hey, just put it on YouTube. Everybody knows there's a thing called YouTube. You know,
you grab
a video, you put up there, type in these boxes. You're not worried about delivery behind the scenes. What are you going to say, Bryce?
Well, but part of the issue with YouTube for podcasting is there are still barriers. If you're, say, creating a new account, right, there are still barriers to having unlimited length of videos or near unlimited length of videos. And so if you're doing an hour-long show, you kind of have to be able to grease the wheels a little bit to get that stuff started. And the other thing is, you know, historically, YouTube used to be all about views. And so you wanted something that was shorter. You know, you wanted something that people could finish and get onto the next video. Where now we're only, you know, in the past couple of years, YouTube is really focused on watch time, which is why a lot of podcast stuff is starting to see a home again on YouTube. But you know, with YouTube, that's there. The algorithm is a black box. They don't know how it works, and you don't know how it works, certainly. And so, it's a weird.
Yeah.
It's not a discovery platform, in the same way iTunes or Google Play or Spotify is.
Certainly, and I would say that, and sometimes it can be. You know, I'm trying to think the number of podcasts I've listened to that came from me looking in iTunes for stuff to find, very limited. YouTube stuff I find all the time. You know, I found Defunct Land and everybody else knew about it, but like nobody told me. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And, you know, and I think on one hand, there's the simplicity of publishing and there's simplicity of, you know, then there's trying to solve the discovery issue. But I don't know. I have no answers.
I mean, ultimately, God, in a different world, I would have loved for Apple to invest just a little bit in creation tools. And I know that that's not their wheelhouse. They've never seen the money in it. If anything, the fact that they created the de facto home for podcasting is something that they enjoy the status of when it matters, but they've never really put a lot of time and effort into it or specifically to evolve it. You know, you would think when they are in a battle with Spotify, for people, and Spotify is now spending a ton of money on curating and building out, also being the home for your podcast, that Apple and Apple Music would be a perfect integration. It's literally
two apps on the phone. It could be an easier one app.
If, you know, if I think part of it is that podcasters are adverse to change. Like, you know, it was within the past year or so that Apple updated their guidelines for RSS metadata. So that along with all the things that you normally put in, they also have fields for just your episode title, just the title of the episode without numbers or the name of the show in it. Excerpts, you can tell if it's a trailer for an episode or if it's a full episode. You can say if your podcast is serialized. You can have seasons. You know, a lot of these new metadata things. And it was last month or so when Apple sent out an email that was like, hey, you know, we have these new metadata things. If you wouldn't mind using them. And there was this huge blowback of just like, well, don't tell me not to put the episode number in my title because people need to know what number it is. And if
I tell them what number. Because they didn't care and they haven't cared forever. So it's like, look, I think that it was a good decision for them to say like, all right, let's standardize things. Yeah. And but you have to expect that you're going to get blowback when, as long as you weren't distributing, you know, malware, then they were fine with it.
And they had to roll it back and say, I mean, it's fine, you know, it's fine if you have the name of your podcast. It's not fine if you have an episode title or number in your thing, but you know, but that's the one thing that caught with people.
Either you care about the community that is dealing with you, or you do not, and inaction is not caring.
Sure,
that leads to tone deaf messaging.
But you know, also now, if what people want is something that's not going to change or is rigid, I would think keeping a stable, you know, software directory would be
what people say they want. It's worth it. It's worth it. But if they're not going to change and they don't care, and it's hard to get in touch with like anybody there, and you have no idea how it works, you have no idea how people get featured, you have no idea, you know, recently they started adding analytics through there. Then you spend most of your time thinking about, okay, this is a static, if imperfect thing in my life. How do I work my way around it?
Yeah.
Here's the thing too. It's like, I'm an Apple fanboy, but also frustrated. Like when they did Final Cut 10, you know, it was a great example of, hey, you know, our engineers, we've been working on the video and we think we've seen the future of how video is, and iMovie's cool because people make more movies with iMovie. We're going to push a lot of this to Final Cut 10. And I think it's a technologically amazing product. It's garbage for trying to get things done. I stopped using it. I mean, like, we had, when we did, years ago, I did my show on A&E, we were, you know, we had Apple was talking to us like, oh, do you want to use Final Cut? You know, because we'd been Final Cut, like, and we talked to Apple like, oh, we're probably going to use Premiere. They sent Apple people over to talk to us about how to do this workflow. And we're like, well, you know, we're doing, you know, doing 12 episodes. Each episode's going to have probably 300 hours, 200 hours of raw footage. Okay. In their mind, you know, you're making a movie. You know, you're not producing a series and doing this. And that was one of the problems, is management of data. And like, well, we have this other way to do this. We're like, it's a totally different workflow. And like, you want us to retrain for this. Yet nobody, and they've had like, they're like, and I remember they're saying this, like, you know, Walter Murch is using Final Cut to do this. I knew the project Walter Murch was working on because a friend of mine financed it, and Walter Murch was doing the polish cut on it, not going through the 40 or 50 hours or hundreds of hours of stuff, the documentary. I remember they said Walter Murch. I'm like, I know the effing project that he did. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and that was a thing that even frustrated me, because they're like sitting there like, well, if it's good enough for Walter Murch, it's like, he's not doing what it was a very frustrating thing where I was personally connected in some levels to this podcasting. It's like, hey, you know what people should do? And we're Apple and we figured it out. And it's like you said, don't put episode titles in there. Don't do this. Like, are you serious? You know? And then it drives me kind of nuts, because it's engineers or people who think we have a better way. Like, look at where people are. You know, what's the IMPI story? You know, don't put in sidewalks, watch where people are walking. And it's a story that Steve Jobs loves. You know, where are people walking? That's where you want to be, rather than we're going to build skyways and bridges. We just need you all to use the elevator now.
Yeah. You know, I would like to give kudos to Patreon, because Patreon is a company that very publicly burnt their hand on the stove a couple times with announcements and rolling back. But they eventually hit a point in which they realized that they need to make more money on certain kind of accounts. And so
they and I don't know how public this is, but they had a meeting with creators, with a fairly large strata of creators. They floated these changes that were coming. They got their feedback on how people would react. And when they announced their feedback, I knew by the fact that my chat room and Twitter mentions weren't all kill Patreon that they'd succeeded, because they announced basically that they were going to strata out certain accounts where either you can have a very dirt dumb Ko-fi-esque free account that is like as quick as just setting something up that doesn't have tiers. If you're the next level up, like many of us are, you can have tiers. Perfect. Great. I need tiers if I'm going to paywall certain content. And then when you get up to some of the people that have built staffs on top of their Patreon,
right,
then there's another level that, you know, costs a little bit more, but you get added services, including somebody that you just know you have a number that you can call, and it's their job, rain or shine, to talk you through all this stuff so you can make sure that everything's working fine. And that was good. And then going forward, there's going to be a change in their percentage. But they didn't change the percentage for everybody. They grandfathered in people that had already built businesses. Now I think they understood that they didn't understand their community before, and they are now better at it. Like, that's right. All you want when you're talking about things that are as important as livelihood. If Facebook changes their algorithm, then – look, unless I'm selling Facebook ads, I don't really care. But if Patreon changes how they do things, I care a lot. If iTunes changes how they do things, I care a lot. These are how I make my living.
Right.
Handling it where they did, where they grandfathered people in and all that, that was really smart. Because you understand these things have to change. And, you know, Patreon, to have growth, they need to change their revenue models. We get that. And you can like a thing, but you can start a business. Then you see how people use it and you realize, like, hey, we're not making the revenue we thought we were making, or you don't know where your distribution is. Like, Patreon, is our average podcast going to have 30 listeners, or, yeah, you know, or is it going to be, you know, 500, but, you know, you might find we're making most of our revenue here, but we have more people here. So it's hard. But yeah, telling people, hey, we're not changing changing the terms of the deal, mm-hmm, all of a sudden is best sort of way. And if it is better, then you let people grow into it. You know, there are a lot of features and things like that I use now that I hated at first, you know. But
hey, by the way, have any of y'all used a Ko-fi, Ko-fi?
No.
I don't know what that is.
So it's a similar sort of funding platform. The idea being like, oh, would you buy me a cup of coffee? Then give me $3, Ko-fi or coffee.
Well, they have a hyphen in the name. There's the first problem.
Well, okay. So
I do the free political newsletter, right? And I wanted to try something out. Like, I just wanted to put some kind of thing, a little tip jar, on the free political newsletter, because obviously I can't charge for it, because that's the whole point. And you don't really charge for newsletters. But I did want to have a thing where it's like, hey, look, this is kind of original content that I'm putting out every day. Knowing my audience, I'm sure that there's X amount of people that if I literally just put out a tip jar, that they would be down for it. So I know I have PayPal.me, but PayPal.me to me still seems a little formal, right? Venmo seems a little bit too hip. So I'm like, all right, you want to know what? Ko-fi might be right there in the middle. It's going to have a little bit of the creature comforts of, hey, just throw a couple dollars at somebody. And also it's funny because their default number is $3, because that's about the cost of a cup of coffee. And there's like the meme going on in our community about how I do the $3 political newsletter. But I swear to God, it is so cutesy to a fault. I, for the life of me, can't just find a dashboard about how much I get paid, how much I've gotten paid.
I can't even find you on here.
Yeah, I haven't had no luck.
Ko-fi.com/free political newsletter.
I see.
I wonder why.
But so you can't even find like a dashboard.
Yeah. Like I just have to go. It just plugs right into my PayPal, and I have to go look in my PayPal to see how much I've gotten. But there's no analytics. There's no like, hey, these amount of people click through and didn't give. Like, it's very, very weird.
That's weird.
Are we talking about, sorry, I had to pick up the kids. Are we talking about alternatives to Patreon?
We're just talking about Kofi. Though I do think, you know, if Kofi is just a direct to PayPal thing, I bet people probably appreciate there not being a middle layer, because PayPal already like has you wait until, you know, funds transfer and stuff. I bet you're
I don't need for it to be, I don't need for them to hold my money. I'm fine with them pitching it directly into the PayPal.
Yeah.
I just want a page. How much money have I made? Boop. Like, you've made $100. Hooray. Now I can know. Oh, wait. Let me look back at how much money I made in April compared to how much money I made in November. Like, you're otherwise, like, what are you? What is the point of you except for being a cutesy, fun, overcomplicated homepage?
Yeah. Well, it looks like they have a Patreon-style subscription tier called Gold. Where you can do, you can actually gate content and, you know, do commissions for artists, change prices. There's some analytics stuff here. That's interesting. I did not know that they had a subscription thing.
Yeah, I guess it's like, I have a problem when I'm frustrated with your core product to then be like, okay, well, cool. I'll give you money to upgrade this frustration that I have right now. Like if I'm anticipating, like, ooh, imagine all the cool things I could do if I had these other things, like, that'd be rad. But if you can't do the, like, here's how much money came in today, here's how much money came in yesterday, like.
As we talk about it, I'm going through the sign-in process. I see they have, like, a gold tier, and I wonder if, like, that's where you have to
that's what Bryce just said. But again, it's like, I'm frustrated. If I'm frustrated with your core product, I don't know why I would ever want to upgrade.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. Are they just a pass-through for PayPal? Is that why they don't know?
I mean, maybe. Maybe they are.
Just typed in my PayPal email address, which implies I didn't sign up for PayPal. I think that's what they are, is they're just a pass-through. Or basically, they're just generating, like, a PayPal buy now or whatever button or something for that. Mm-hmm. Let me see what... See what happens if I go to my page.
The gold information feature page that I found did not seem... It said it had some Google Insight stuff, so it's like how people find you, but I didn't even seem to see any financial...
Yeah, all it's doing is it's creating a PayPal guest checkout. It's basically like it's just generating like a PayPal buy it now sort of thing here, so they're not even processing the payments.
Right.
Which is cool. I was thinking about building like an app that would let you like kind of create like an easy storefront using like PayPal me or whatever without you having to do back end accounting. But I see your frustration. But anyhow, I get your frustration. But I think what they do is they try to make it so simple.
And look, they wanted to make it dirt dumb. I still think that there's a lot of things that get a little bit more complicated than I would want. But and who knows whether I'll stay on it, because at that point I might as well just have a PayPal. I like the idea that the PayPal.me thing is literally just how much would you want to give? Hit the button, you're done. It's literally just a page with one search field or one field. But I wanted to give it a shot just because I knew it was another name on the scene. I've seen it bandied about a bunch.
Yeah, Ko-fi. That's...
No, it's like a coffee, right?
Yeah.
Buy me a coffee.
Yeah. All right. Any picks?
I am almost done with Blitzscaling. On your recommendation, I'm finishing it. And to the book's credit, it does a really good job of reminding you all the very good reasons to not enjoy or not engage in Blitzscaling. it keeps saying like, hey, if you're in this situation, I'm like, which I am. They're like, don't Blitzscale. And I was like, okay, don't. Great. but I am enjoying it. I think it's a good, I'm glad I'm finishing it. So whether or not it's for you, I think there are good ideas. Just the general idea of like there is a place and a time where the right winning move is to engage in highly inefficient spending of resources in order to establish yourself in certain marketplaces.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it.
I'll make a pick. Back to Kickstarter. Baobax is a company that founded on Kickstarter. They did the ultimate travel jacket, and now they're doing the ultimate travel pants. Ooh. Eventually, I'll have ultimate travel everything. But
I actually, as far as Kickstarters go with like bigger ticket famous kind of items, I was very impressed with the travel jacket. It's held up. I've worn it a lot. It is my go-to. It's raining jacket that I wear on planes. Ton of pockets. I keep a bunch of stuff in there just so I always have them, like chargers and cords and stuff like that. So I'm excited to see what they do with the pants.
And that's a Kickstarter thing still?
Yes, it is. Kickstarting again, but I got a email that was like, hey, because you backed before, here's like a early bird thing that we're doing. So I took advantage of it.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Like, I had the travel jacket too, and dig it.
Yeah, man, I'm still waiting on some headphones that I ordered, 2 years before I quit traveling for a living. So I get diligently every 2 months. They're still in China, working on some stuff.
I don't think I have one. Andrew, do you have one?
My pick is going to be... Quick, look around here. Novavars, AirPods.
Audio listeners, quite literally, that's what he's doing. If you've seen that Family Guy bit with Stephen King...
I put something aside that I forgot about completely, and it's not... I'm not here to push my book Orbital, which is now in paperback. Okay. Literally, I set this over here because I've been meaning for the last two shows to talk about this, and I forgot every single time, and I'm glad my frantic search. So, hey, look at this paperback copy, right? Look at this. Look at this.
Yeah, that's a paperback
book. Pages.
It's got pages in it. Mm-hmm.
Looks like podcast a real book. Listeners really pay
it's
attention.
Got writing on all of the pages almost.
Words arranged in order.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to do paperback copies of my books. Look at that about the author. The problem was, it's a pain in the ass making books. I don't know if you know this. And we've talked about this because, like, I know, Brian, you went through a period where you had to convert a bunch of your stuff into books and all that sort of things and trying to do versions. You don't want to spend too much time, particularly because, like, if you're an indie author, in my experience, most people are just going to buy the Kindle version, right, or the whatever ebook version is.
Right.
I started using for that a while ago for my independent stuff a software called Vellum, which is on the Mac. And Vellum makes it so much easier to import your – because normally you create a Word file, then you convert it, and then you upload it to Amazon or wherever. But there's that middle layer, like things – formatting can get lost or it's hard. And there's things like Libre and stuff, Pub. But it's like coding. It's really, really not fun. What Vellum does is it allows you – you can import directly from Scrivener or Microsoft Word. You take it in there. You create your chapters. You choose how you want the format of the book to look, right? And we're looking at the examples of it, like, do you want to have the big, fancy, big first letter inside of your ebook? The little stylings has got these templates there, okay? Once you do that and you add your image, you output it, and it outputs it in every format, you know, for Kindle, for Nook, for whatever else, which is great. It's one of the things I love about Vellum. Now, if I have to make changes to my ebook, I just go into Vellum and I tweak it here, tweak it there, and it's good. And I can up change it and upload it really quickly. Vellum added support for print publishing a while ago, and it's pricey. But if you buy the whole Vellum press thing, that ebook to convert it into a print book is easy. It took me 30 minutes to make that book, and then upload it to Amazon's KDP program, or the CreateSpace. And now I have a print version of my book. It is so effing simple to do this now. You know, and it's one of those people like, oh, I was thinking about publishing a book. I'm like, spend a day learning some of these tools and you will save yourself a lot of money. A lot of money. You know, eventually you look at Vellum, you're like, it's $300, you know, for the app. Like, yes, but once you have it, you can produce as many books as you want and whatever. And I love the way that book turned out. I picked it up and I'm like, it's the page layouts, all of that stuff, just delightful. So.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's my pick. And, my perennial pick is, hey, Udemy, learn to code. It's amazing. You lose time and you forget where you are and time travel into the future as you get lost in projects. So, that's it. Spin after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.